up for the segment of the show that we call Nostalgia Town, where we talk to well-known older Australians about the musical, the theatrical and the film experiences that helped make them the people they are today.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh.
John Doyle, AM, is an Australian actor, writer, radio presenter and comedian, best known perhaps for his portrayal of the character Rampaging Roy Slaven. What some listeners may not be aware of is that John Doyle has also been an author and wrote the acclaimed miniseries Changi. John Doyle, you grew up in Lithgow. So what were your formative cultural experiences, apart, of course, from the Zigzag Railway?
Well, Lithgow was town dominated by the railway and the coal industry. Not much else going on, apart from, I suppose, the clubs were the cultural enrichment for the town. The bowling club and the workers' club, where my father played in various bands, as his father had done, and all his brothers did. So music was really the only cultural currency, I suppose. And when I say music, I mean popular music with a splash of jazz. Dad was a tenor sax player, and his hero, I suppose, was, or the person upon whom he modelled his style, was Coleman Hawkins. So from a pretty early age, I could separate the difference between, Charlie Ventura, Charlie Parker, or Benny Golson from any number of usually American black sax players. I suppose the saxophone in the 40s was what the guitar was to become in the 60s as a popular instrument for people to play. They were pretty determined that his mum and dad had passed this on, so my sisters were all taught to read music. So my sisters went off to the nuns to learn the piano, and my brother and I joined the Lithgow Town Band, the brass band, where we learnt the treble clef. So we were cornet players, and I suppose the great ambition was for each of us to play in the clubs. That's all we wanted to do. Dad said it was a terrific way of not only amusing yourself, but of supplementing income. That was our cultural ambition, to play in the clubs, which I started doing with Dad in the Blue Mountains. I think the first gig I was 14, the Carrington Hotel in Katoomba was the first engagement. And then I used to join my Uncle Ray at the bowling club in Lithgow there for some time on a Saturday night.
And can you remember what you played with your father, aged 14, at the Carrington Hotel in Katoomba?
Well, these nights were usually, you'd describe them as 50-50 nights, I think, Jeff. So you'd start off very, very quiet. Dad said, Dad's advice was, doesn't matter what you sound like, mate, because no one's going to be listening. And he was sort of right. Then we'd move on to more structured dance numbers, usually, the usual jazz waltz, Pride of Erin, that sort of thing. It was all, very gentle. I would suggest, modelled on the big band sounds that were just post-war coming from the United States.
Not very much Australian stuff then?
Oh, no. No, not at all. None. Nil. Nix.
That's disappointing. I mean, there was so much good Australian stuff going on in the background. Was it a bit of the cultural cringe, do you suppose, John?
Oh, no, it was simply determined by what you heard on radio, Jeff. And records you imported. My Uncle Ray was the first to import Dave Brubeck records. He was the first person in the country to have them. So it was a great education in many ways to visit the library of my uncles and listen to their records, because they were all imported. And radio just played popular music. That's all we heard.
You were born in 1953.
Yep.
So listening to the radio, it would have been the late 50s, the 60s.
Yep.
Radio stations of the time were probably a little bit staid. Is that not right?
Very much so, yes. Yes, they were. They were. But we listened to a lot of commercial radio, Jeff, back in those days, and commercial television too. We rarely looked at the ABC because there were no ads. Oddly enough, seems bizarre now, but that was the thinking at the time.
No ads. That means cultural poverty, doesn't it?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We were creatures of pop.
Commercial radio and commercial TV.
Yeah.
You never really listened to the ABC, but the ABC would emerge as quite an important developer of particularly Australian music. Did you ever switch on to Double J? I know that you eventually became a broadcaster on Triple J.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking the 80s now. The landscape had changed enormously. What I was dwelling on then was really the formative years. I mean, I would take advantage of looking at the ABC when my parents were out on Saturday nights, and if I was in on a Saturday night, this is when I was 11, 12 years old, and I remember watching a series called Madame Bovary that starred, I think, Nyree Dawn Porter, I think was her name, and I was astonished by this program. There were themes, things going on that were beyond my ken. They fascinated me. These were sort of stolen moments of opportunity that I would savour because I had control of the television with their absence.
So your cultural awakening was Madame Bovary aged 11?
Pretty much, yes.
Then, of course, you did become yourself a performer of sorts in radio, in theatre.
To begin with, the theatre. I became interested in theatre. I did drama at university eventually for a number of years, and that it was a revelation, really. I felt I'd found it was a homecoming in a way. I'd been dabbling with writing scenes and recording scenes. At one point, I was given a tape recorder for Christmas, and I still have it. And I must have been 13 or 14 at the time, and I would write scenes for my friends to perform, and we would record these things in my bedroom, and without any ever thinking that you could make a living out of doing something like this. It just seemed absurd to even contemplate. In fact, I did, but when doing drama in university, that many things clicked, and I felt, as I said, that it was sort of a homecoming. I felt that this was what I wanted to do, and that's been the sort of occupation ever since.
A previous guest was Graham Bond, and he pretty much describes the same thing growing up here in Marrickville. He got himself a reel-to-reel tape recorder and just made up his own shows.
Yes, yeah, well, that's basically where mine was, a tiny reel-to-reel tape recorder, yeah. Yep. Similar story.
65 now, John Doyle, and you've managed to get a few things under your belt. The one of them that I am most envious of is spending time in a tinny with that man, Tim Flannery.
Yep.
But a little older now. Can ageing, John, be fun? What are the benefits of ageing?
Yes. Look, maybe I don't get as angry anymore. No, I probably do, but I can control it better. And I think that, you know, everyone has a reason for thinking the way they do, and it's finding the reason people think the way they do that sort of interests me. I think I'm more tolerant now of different views. Once I understand where someone is coming from, then I can place the views in context, whereas prior to that I was probably far more judgmental and quick to come to judgments that were probably a little black and white and unfair. I can see there's far more shades of grey in opinion these days than I was prepared to tolerate in days gone by. So if age has done that, well, that's probably a good thing.
You're talking about wisdom, I suppose.
I suppose, yes, I suppose.
John Doyle, do you value your social connections? How important are they to you?
Oh, vital. Yes, vital. And that's sort of the downside of approaching this phase of one's life, saying bye. I've had a number of very close friends who've left the earth recently, and that's been really devastating, really. You feel it's a great sense of loss, really. But what it does do is make you appreciate those colleagues, chums, friends that are still with you on the journey.
And how do you keep up your contacts, John?
I'm terribly selfish in many ways, Jeff. I rarely go out. The small coterie of friends live nearby. We see each other two or three times a week. Same group that have been, you know, mucking around together for the best part of 40 years or so. I think the idea of an expanding network withers as you get older, and you tend to cluster around the small group that you've cultivated over a long period of time. Those sorts of social contacts are absolutely vital, utterly vital.
Utterly vital indeed. So you've got a tight, small group of people that you spend a fair amount of time with. I mean, three times a week is a fair amount of time.
I suppose it is, yeah. Well, one of those occasions is on the tennis court, of course.
You don't slip on the lycra and get on the bicycle?
No. No, walking and tennis, Jeff. Yeah. That's the answer.
Is there any message, John Doyle, you have to Australians as they age?
Stay involved in many ways. I mean, what am I trying to say here? The less you go out, the less you want to go out. The less you get involved, the less you want to get involved. In many ways, you've got to force yourself. I try to stay as active as I can in terms of news gathering and trying to keep up with the various madnesses that are going on in all sorts of places. Try to remain aware and be prepared to keep learning.
It never ends, does it?
It never ends, exactly.
Every guest on Nostalgia Town gets the opportunity to nominate a song to go out on. Have you had a thought about what you want us to go out on?
Favourite songs. These things vary from time to time. I'm always drawn towards Body and Soul by Coleman Hawkins because it takes me back to the lounge room of my childhood. But I think the most enduring song that has lasted with me is when I first I got a copy of David Bowie's Hunky Dory. It must have been in about 1971, and I found it astonishing. So I would suggest Life on Mars.
Life on Mars. John Doyle, thank you very much for joining us today on Nostalgia Town, and all the very best for the future.
Good on you, Jeff. Not a problem. Absolute pleasure. But the film is a sad thing for...
And now, on the Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century, it's time for Out and About, where we find out about some of the things that older people can do in Sydney and in the Inner West. Our guest today on Out and About is Rita Tratt from the Older Women's Network Theatre Group. How are you today, Rita?
I am really well, yes. We had a fabulous show on Saturday, but maybe we can talk more about that later.
That's great. Rita, tell us, what is the Older Women's Network Theatre Group and who is it aimed at?
Well, the theatre group started in 1987 when a small band of, like, feisty older women performed original songs, and they wanted to force the attention of politicians and the media to the presence of older women. So they gathered in front of Parliament House in Canberra and they stayed there and they sang and they had their banners and they got their messages across. And that started a consolidation of a group of women who believed that they were on the outer and this was true, in terms of employment, educational benefits, superannuation, a whole lot of issues that were present in that day. So that's going back quite a few years, really. Today, the theatre group's there to really educate and entertain audiences, and we talk about, like, important issues such as health, housing, avoiding social isolation, which is an ongoing problem. But we also have fun. And so we want to get that message across too, that ageing is just part of a cycle, really. And we don't change the person we are. We can go on enjoying life. We may have some restrictions with health and whatever, but generally speaking, there's a lot of things that we can do. It's aimed really at people of all ages, but a lot of our audiences are people who come to council events. We've performed for probably 12, 15 councils in Sydney and the regions. We've performed for university students. We've been guests at quite a number of educational forums on elder abuse, domestic violence, issues that affect older women, particularly for social work students. We have a lot of performances for community groups. We performed at the National Folk Festival in Canberra twice. So we perform in Sydney, regions, interstate, because really we're the only group of our kind, it seems. So we get asked to do lots of conferences, anything that's really dealing with elder abuse, and that's really on the agenda right now.
So tell me, what did you do at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
Okay, so at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, we took our show, Don't Knock Your Granny, to audiences there. It's a 50-minute show, so we had to build up our 30-minute show, obviously. We rehearsed like crazy before we went. We have a fabulous director called Jo, who's a professional in the theatre, and she's just given us incredible time, and she can work with us, and she can see characters in us that we can play and pick very good material. So we went there and we were like anxious, of course. We had no idea in terms of what type of audience we might get, how many we might get. Sometimes people are lucky to get five. So we had a good space. It could hold 70 people and our average was 60. So that was fantastic. And we got standing ovations and like we couldn't believe it. We thought, So obviously the message, and I think it's the writing in our shows and the fact that it's older women performing the roles of older people that really bring it home. So there's often quite a few tears. There's lots of laughter as well because we try and do light and shade. It was just a fabulous experience. We did three shows and we came back feeling very strong, and I think it empowered us more and really renewed our enthusiasm to keep going stronger and stronger.
So why do we need to have a project like the Older Women's Network Theatre Group?
Well, we need to have the project because it really promotes older women in the community and the issues that they face in terms of homelessness, health issues, superannuation. So we're like a publicity arm of the Older Women's Network. Often we have very good members who will go out and speak and advocate on various issues, but we combine with community initiatives. Like we did 10 shows, I remember, where the police were involved and community liaison officers were involved. And just being able to see us act out what elder abuse might look like or other things that we take on, it opens a lot of, I don't know, minds. People can visually understand exactly what's going on. And so it strengthens the messages of our organisation. Yeah, we work really well in tandem with them.
And I'm guessing that for the people who are involved in the group, it's a pretty enriching experience.
Oh, it's very enriching. Some of our members have been there 20 years. We get stronger and stronger, I think, in our support of each other. We can see issues that affect older women as we go through life. And writing the material is really a great experience because we can put our ideas together a director can come in and say, yeah, this will work or that won't work or do whatever. And we can be topical. So we're always trying to change things so that we don't get, like, stagnant. I mean, we'll be working on another show quite soon. We've developed a housing show, and that's very topical right now. And elder abuse is going to be topical for quite a long time yet, I think. And then we have fun shows where we actually just, you know, promote, you know, good living, having fun. Yeah, that sort of thing. We meet every week. We see each other for 5 hours a week. And then we socialise out of rehearsal, and we do extra rehearsals when we do things like Edinburgh. And last weekend, we were part of the Batch Festival that the Griffin Theatre runs. And we got a standing ovation and a full house. So we were like, yeah. And we'd really like to say that, you know, if anyone out there wants to come and join us, they'd be very welcome to come and have a look and see what we do. And maybe they'd like to join too.
And how can people find out more about the group?
Okay, they can find out more by, probably the easiest way is to get in touch with the Older Women's Network, and they can call them on 9519 8044, and then they can give the number of one of us, and we can talk to them a lot further about, you know, what we do and why they might like to join us.
Rita Tratt, actor with the Older Women's Network Theatre Group, thank you for joining us today on Out and About.
Thank you.
The Baby Boomer's Guide to Life in the 21st Century is produced in the studios of Radio Skid Row. You can hear this show again weekly on Thursdays at 3 o'clock, or you can listen again online by searching for Radio Skid Row, and you'll find a link in the SoundCloud box to the right. Join us again in a week's time for the next episode, and don't forget to check us out online by going to www.radioskidrow.org and following the links. This production was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Find out more at cbf.org.au. This program is produced with the assistance of Lex Marinos and Raul Hernandez. I'm your host, Jeff Forillo, and I hope you can join us again next week.